So we are almost done with this book called Gyan Sar, or the Essence of Knowledge. We'll be doing the last verse today. Just to briefly summarize, the book starts with a student who is so caught up in the world and being successful and achieving a lot, and then he realizes that this is not going to give me permanent happiness, and he goes to a teacher who then instructs him on self-knowledge, on what is the nature of the spirit and what is the nature of the world and how to distinguish oneself and how to abide in the self-knowledge and to realize that you, the student, are nothing but that one divinity expressing through all, and that is your essential nature and you need to abide in that. And having studied that from the teacher, contemplated upon it and spent some time applying it in his life, the student also realizes the truth, understands that, yes, I am of the nature of supreme bliss, that spirit which we have studied over the past few months. And then he sees the oneness, that this whole universe is nothing but me. I alone am. Everything is, because as I am that spirit, everybody is that spirit. Not only that, but he experiences great joy because he says this world that used to give me sorrow, give me problems, but now everything gives me joy because everything is that Lord alone. So how can anything be sorrowful? How can anything make me miserable? And having discovered that joy within, then he's supremely happy, supremely blissful. And that's what we find in the lives of these great saints, that no matter what the world does to them, they have experienced that inner joy, that inner bliss, and nothing can shake them. Not only that, but last week we had studied that the student has now nothing more to do, nothing more to accomplish. You and I, when we work in the world, we work out of incompleteness, that by getting this, I'll become complete. By getting this, I'll become happy. This object or this position or this situation or this person, but a person who is himself complete and experience that inner joy and bliss of the Lord's presence within, says, I am all complete, I am blissful, I do not need the world to give me something, to give me happiness, to make me complete. So he says, I have nothing to do in this world. But does this person not work? Yes, the person works, but not out of incompleteness, but out of compassion, out of love, because he has experienced that inner joy and he becomes a teacher, becomes a prophet, becomes a saint who spreads the God's word. But then the student says, even though I have accomplished everything, there is still one thing that I need to do, which I feel I have not done. So everybody says, you just now said you are complete and you have accomplished everything. No, but there is one thing I still need to do, which I feel I have not done. So they say, okay, what is that? So that is the last verse, verse number 18, in page 56 in this book. Karyam name yadyapi kinchidatra. Karyam name yadyapi kinchidatra. Tathapi kartum parisheshamasti. Tathapi kartum parisheshamasti. Yasyo padeshe nacha labdha vidya. Yasyo padeshe nacha labdha vidya. Nityam hi bhaktya guru pada seva. He says, Karyam name yadyapi kinchidatra. Even though I have accomplished everything, I have accomplished does not mean that he has gone round and done things, but he has found that completeness and the compulsion to do. You and I just work out of a compulsion. You know, we are workaholics. We work from morning to night. But he says, I don't need to do anything to make myself happy. If I work, it is out of spontaneous love. But yet, even though there is nothing for me to do, tathapi kartum parisesham asti. Even though and then, there is one thing which I have left, which I have not done, which I feel I should do. So they say, what? What is it that you have not done? Yasya upadeshena cha labdha vidya. This knowledge, labdha vidya, this knowledge from upadesh, from whose teachings I received this knowledge. So my guru, my teacher who has taught me this knowledge, what do I do to that teacher? How should be my attitude to the teacher? Nityam hi bhaktya guru pada seva. Nityam, constantly with bhaktya, with devotion, with love, guru pada seva. I should serve the teacher's feet. So this person feels that he has to serve the teacher's feet. And we always, when we think about serving somebody's feet, you know, we are not sure what does this person mean. You know, like, does it mean that bow down and touch his feet or always stay humbly at his feet? This is often misunderstood. When a teacher comes or a wise person comes and we bow down and touch the feet, it is not that we are worthless or whatever, but the feet represent knowledge. Because just as a person stands upon his feet, so the guru stands upon his knowledge. So the feet represents the knowledge that the guru stands on. So when I bow down to the feet, A, it expresses humility, it expresses gratitude, and it expresses a recognition that the teacher who has this storehouse of knowledge has given this knowledge to me. So people think, you know, if I bow down to the teacher, maybe bring him food or maybe help him, you know, financially, okay, I have done my duty. No, but there is a lot more that one has to do once one acquires this knowledge, and I have listed some of the things in this chart. I hope everybody can see it. The first thing that the teacher wants, what makes the teacher happy, it's not that you bow down or touched his feet or brought him food or wrote him a check for the mission. The most important thing that the guru expects of the student is that what I have taught you, you learn it, you understand it, you assimilate it into your mind, you abide in it, you start make that knowledge so firm that you are completely convinced of the correctness of this knowledge, and then you bring it into your life. So if I have studied the Bhagavad Gita, or if I have studied the Bible, or if I have studied the Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib, if I have studied the scriptures, it's not enough just to be able to chant the verses or just to be able to memorize and, you know, give talks. But have I brought this knowledge into my life, the qualities that Jesus stands for? Am I able to live those qualities? You know, the Ten Commandments, whatever the teachings are of the scriptures. So abidance in the knowledge means not only understanding the knowledge, not only constantly remembering it, but changing your life. If your life has not changed, then that knowledge is useless. So how can I modify my existing life to live the life of the great saints and the prophets? So that is called abiding and becoming one with that knowledge and making that knowledge my own. So that is number one. Number two is I have to spread the knowledge. That is part of my duty. When I have learned something, just as, you know, a person who learns mathematics or physics from his professor and he does a PhD and passes, you know, gets his degree, then he himself becomes a professor and starts teaching physics or mathematics. Why? Because he has studied from his teacher and he feels that he has the ability to teach, so he teaches. So similarly, one should attempt to spread the teachings. These spiritual teachings are so wonderful and people can benefit. So it is our duty to share this knowledge. If I can teach it myself, that's very good. If I'm not able to teach it, I bring others and tell them, okay, there is this book or there is this CD or there is this material. You should read it. You should listen to it. So try to spread this knowledge so that more and more people turn their minds towards spirituality. There is so much push in this world towards materialism. There is constant, you know, bombardment of advertising and business and promotions and politics and economics and every, all, you know, and the mind is always running outward, seeing, acquiring, holding, possessing. There are very few people in this world who go inward. And that is ultimately where the truth lies. That is ultimately the goal of human existence, is to go inward and discover my inner truth, my inner essence. So if I can do it myself, as we practice in our meditation, going inward and discovering that inner truth, that inner essence, similarly, I should spread this knowledge, encourage more people. That's what they say. The more that people meditate in this world, the more peaceful this world will become. And there is this movement of Mahesh Yogi where they actively, you know, promote that. They say that as and more people meditate, this world will become more peaceful. Because when you are in meditation, in that silence, you are spreading that peace. It may not appear that you are doing anything if you are just meditating, but that silence and that peace, especially that's why when you are in the presence of these saints, in fact, they used to say that when Saint Francis used to walk out, even animals and birds would come and talk to him. The great rishis, they talk about those great sages in the Himalayas who used to meditate. And there's pictures of a lion and a tiger a lion and a deer sitting next to each other, because that great sage, his power is so profound, the peace is so, that even a wild animal like the lion or tiger, you know, would sit next to him. So spreading the teachings and making more people aware of this knowledge and encouraging them to meditate is also one of the duties of a student. Then the other one is to follow the instructions. As I said, the commandments or the teachings of the guru or whatever are meant for our benefit. So I have to understand that. I have to apply that in my life. And I have to make a substantial change, because all these years, 30, 40, 50 years, or however long I have lived, I have been running in one direction, and that is out into the world of objects. So I have to change the direction and follow the instructions and live my life according to the teachings. Then people say, so what? You know, if the guru taught me, I can pay him. You know, just as in a university or a college, you know, you pay for your tuition, you know, you pay for your semester and you learn and you go. You don't feel any debt or, you know, it's okay, my alma mater taught me, but I paid for it. I mean, some people have the gratitude, but a lot of people say, I paid for the tuition. The teachers were paid and I paid it. But spiritual knowledge cannot be valued in dollars and cents. You know, we have this mission in India where they keep these students for 2 years and teach them from morning to night without any tuition. They are housed, they stay free, and they learn from morning to evening, and then they become, you know, monks and become teachers like the ones we have here who come. Swami Ishwarananda and all. So somebody might say, you know, Guru, you kept me for 2 years. Thank you very much. And Guru will say, you're welcome. Have a nice day. No, it doesn't work like that. You cannot say, you know, I studied for 2 years. Okay, how much is the cost? $2,000 per year. You know, in India, it's not very expensive. Okay, here I've collected 4,000. Here is your check. 4,000, you and I are through. We can't. What the knowledge that the teacher has given us is invaluable. It's like you tell your parents, you know, mom and dad, okay, I stayed in your house 18 years. So how much did it cost? $10,000 a year, you know, tuition and all. Okay, here's a check. Okay, you and I are done. You can't. You cannot pay. You cannot put a value on the time your mother spent all night, you know, when you were sick, and how she stayed up all night taking care of you, how she attended your school functions, encouraged you when you were down, and how hard the father worked. So such things you cannot put a value on. What my parents have done for me, or what my guru or what my teacher has done for me, because this knowledge is called a second birth. In Hinduism, they say Dvija is born again. Also in Christianity, there is a term, born again. What do they mean by born again or twice born? It is that one time we took birth from the mother's womb, but the second birth is when I get this knowledge from the teacher and he wakes me up to my true nature and makes me understand who I really am. And so that is a second birth, because that time the ego dies, the individual ego dies, and I become one with the cosmic self. So that second birth is something that can only happen with the grace of the teacher and the grace of the Lord. First of all, the Lord has to be pleased with my efforts. I have to make the effort to find the right guru, to get the right knowledge. And when the Lord's grace is upon me, then I find the guru. The guru appears in my life and it changes my life. So that is called twice born, or born again, or the second birth. Also, they say the relationship with the teacher is always of duality, always of two, even though all our teachings in this mission talk about the non-dual self, that there is one consciousness alone and this whole universe is just one. Everything is one. We are all connected. Everybody is one. Everybody is equal. Everybody is equally divine. Nobody is better than the other. And everybody is perfect. But why does it have to be duality with the teacher? The teacher and I can never become equal, because as I said, the debt of gratitude that I have for the teacher is so immense that to think even that I am equal is wrong. You cannot say, teacher, you and I are one, so now you get up from the chair and I'll sit and I'll, you know. No, not like that. The humility for the teacher is always there, because as long as the body is there, you know, you have to deal with the body level as a body. You can, just as even though you have realized that you are that infinite truth and that spirit, but when you go to the airport and you're filling out the paperwork and they say, what is your name? You don't say, I am that infinite, all-pervading truth. When were you date of birth? I was never born. You know, are you male or female? I am beyond. No, you don't say all that. You tell them your name and you tell them when you were born and where you lived and what. Because for the functioning in the world, you have to. Even a great saint or Mahatma, when he goes to fill out his form and date of birth, he has to write all that. This reminds me of a story. Our teacher, Swami Chinmayananda, who is the founder of this mission, had started this school in India where he would teach these students, as I said, for 2 years. They would live with him. And majority of them stay and serve the mission, but some of them don't. You know, they start their own, and you know, and there is no requirement if you want to separate, and there is no bond or no agreement or nothing in writing. So this one student started his own mission, his own organization, and was teaching. And so this, our Swami, the head of the mission, after a few years, happened to meet that student in some gathering. So now the student, the teacher from whom he had stayed and learned for 2 years, should have respect, but he said, it's okay, you know, he just stood next to him. So the Swami, the teacher, asked the student, so where are you these days? So he says, I am everywhere. You know, foolish thing like that to tell in front of your teacher that I am everywhere. So the teacher, what did he do? He bowed down to the student and says, oh, you must be God, you know, because you are everywhere. So this is called inappropriate understanding of the, you know, you understand within that you are that infinite spirit. But when you meet people like your parents or your teachers or your grandparents, people whom you should respect, you deal with them with respect. You may be the CEO of Google or you may be the president of the United States. But when you meet your parents who may be poor and living in some small house in Illinois or wherever, but when you meet them, you are still the child, you know, you are still the student. So that attitude one should never forget. So talking about inappropriate comments like the student made, talking about inappropriate comments, this man and was in the, ended up in the hospital with a fractured nose and black eye and multiple bruises, and he was brought to the ER. And he was hurt all over, and so they admitted him to the hospital. So his friend went to visit him. He says, what happened to you? What did you do? What did you say? He says, I don't know what happened. He said, what do you mean you don't know what happened? Who did this to you? He says, I don't know what happened. What only thing I remember is that, you know, I had been unemployed for the past couple of months. He says, yeah, I know. He says, yeah, I lost my job. And so I was one day evening sitting on my sofa with my feet up on the table with a beer in my hand and watching TV. And, you know, a whole day I hadn't gone out, so I was just relaxing. And my wife, who still has a job, had worked all day, worked overtime, and came home exhausted and tired. And she asked me, what's on TV? And I told her, dust. I said, after that, I don't know what happened. She said, that's the last I remember. So that's called inappropriate comments. So one has to always be with the right attitude to our teacher. And then this brings me to what kind of a student should I be? How should I study? And it can be anything. It can be spirituality. It can be religion. It can be psychology. It can be mathematics, art. There are four kinds of students, just as there are four kinds of horses. So horses, yes, there are four kinds of horses. The first kind is like the mule. You know, you keep hitting it, beating it, beating it, whipping it. It never moves. Once it sits, it sits. It never moves. And those are the ones that are very impossible to get any work from them. The second kind of horse is the one where as long as you are whipping, it moves. If you are whipping, it moves very fast. The moment you stop whipping, it stops running. The third kind of horse is the one where you just have to show it the whip and maybe just make a little noise and the horse starts running. But periodically the horse stops and then again you have to make a little motion or gently touch it and the horse moves. So horse moves very well, but it periodically needs to be reminded. And the fourth kind of horse is the one you sit there and you just make a sound with your mouth and the horse knows, okay, where I have to go. And he's so tuned with the rider that just with the movement of the legs, the horse can be directed and it virtually goes on its own. The rider doesn't need to do anything. So similarly, in the world, there are four kinds of students. The first kind is the one that the teacher may keep on hammering again and again, telling, never learns, and the teacher finally gives up and says, okay, this person cannot be taught. So that is the first kind. The second kind is that the teacher has to constantly whip, constantly remind. And as long as the teacher is reminding, telling, the person will do it. The moment the teacher stops, person again falls asleep, stops progressing. The third kind is that teacher doesn't need to be constantly on his back. Just tells him once or twice and then periodically he sees that the student is not progressing. So again, he will remind him, look, you know, what is your goal? What is your purpose? Where are you? And the fourth kind of student is the teacher just has to give one signal. Just tell him a little bit about where to go and the student then takes off. So we have to decide what kind of student we want to be. All of us need a teacher, but the one to be is the fourth kind where I get my knowledge and then I run. Then I'm on my path to success and then I help others. So that is the kind of student that we should be. And last, there is a little story from Chandogya Upanishad. There is not that much time, but I'll just tell it briefly. Upanishads are the highest knowledge of the Vedas, which give us the knowledge of what is this world, who is this God or spirit, who am I, and what is my relationship. All that is explained. And this book also has some of the ideas of the Upanishads. So in this particular Upanishad, there was a young boy who, in those days, the children used to go to live with the teacher. They would go and live with the teacher for 12 years, like a dormitory. But these were these mission-type schools, which were outside the city and which were supported by donations or by, you know, the students didn't have to pay, but the king or the rich people would make donations. And they would live there for 12 years, and they would learn not only the science also, but they would learn spirituality, chanting of the mantras, all the highest teachings, and then they were expected to come back either and work in the world or become teachers. So this particular student first, you know, for almost till age 12, never went to school. You know, most of his friends by 6 or 7 or 8 were sent for 12 years. His father finally tells him, look, you know, you can't waste your life here, so you better go. So he goes and studies for 12 years, comes back at age 24, very arrogant. Because he has studied, he thinks he knows it all, you know, as most of us do when we are teenagers. Or when we have just studied, we think parents don't know anything. And his father himself was a very, very wise, learned person. But obviously, he didn't want to teach him at home. He felt he would learn better in a school setup. So he walked around very arrogant. I know everything. He would go around lecturing people and all. So his father one day calls him and asks him, he says, what did you learn, son? So he said, I learned this, 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 this. He lists all the things he learned, and very, his nose is up in the air, and I know everything. So his father says, is that so? He said, yep, I learned everything. He says, but did your teachers tell you that knowing which there is nothing more to be known, knowing which the unheard becomes heard, the unthought of becomes thought of, the unknown becomes known? He says, what are you talking? He says, did they teach you that self-knowledge of who you really are? He says, my teacher must not have known that, because if he had, he would have taught me. See, that itself is arrogance, because the teacher himself was a great realized saint who was running this. And to think that my teacher didn't know it, that's why he didn't teach me, was the height of arrogance. Then he realized that I made a very wrong comment, because he could see in his father's face great disapproval. And he thought, if I don't change my attitude, he might send me another 12 years to study. So he says, no, I didn't mean that. What I mean is, father, you seem to know. So why don't you tell me what this is? So then he becomes humble, and then the father actually instructs the child in this Upanishad on what is the thing that we call God or Brahman. So he teaches him through simple examples, through day-to-day examples. Like he told him, go bring a seed, put it in the ground. And then after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, when the roots come out, and then he says, you know, this big tree, all of them started in the seed. In the seed, you don't see the tree. Do you see the tree? No. All you see is, you know, a few, you know, little pieces of what they call cotyledons. But that unmanifest tree becomes manifest as this huge banyan tree, or this huge, you know, oak tree, or whatever. That little acorn of oak has nothing in it, but the unmanifest is there. So similarly, in that Lord, the unmanifest world is there, and whatever you see manifest is unmanifest in that consciousness. So just as the tree which was unmanifest in that seed. Then he tells him another example. He says, okay, get a bowl of water and put 2 tablespoons of salt in it. And he does. And he says, okay, leave it here and come back tomorrow. When he comes back tomorrow, he says, where is the salt? He says, I can't see it. But can you taste it? Yeah, he takes a spoonful of water. He can taste the salt. He says, okay, take a spoonful from the bottom of the pitcher. It is there, from the side, from the left side, from the right side. Even though the salt cannot be seen, but it is pervading the entire bowl of water and can be tasted. So similarly, the God, the consciousness, the spirit, even though cannot be seen, cannot be heard, cannot be experienced, but is within us and everywhere, pervading everywhere, just as the salt pervades the entire water. So that spirit, the consciousness that we call God or Father in heaven or Brahman, pervades this entire universe inside and out. And through, just as you cannot see the salt, but you can taste it with your tongue. So similarly, even though you cannot see that consciousness, but in your silence of meditation, with the right instruments, when you apply the right instrument, you can experience that Lord's presence. So this is the beautiful, and then of course he tells him that this totality that you see is, you are also part of that. You are that Tattvamasi, and that is the teaching. So in this today's episode, what we studied is that I should, first of all, be a right kind of a student, have the right attitude, and approach the teacher, then my knowledge will be conferred upon me, and then it is my duty to spread this knowledge and share it with others. So this ends this beautiful text called Gyan Sar, which is the essence of knowledge, which takes us from bondage to liberation, from ignorance to knowledge. We'll be starting a new book, but I thought if there's any comments about today's talk, any questions. But rather than wait for that, one should know what is my goal in life and take off as soon as you get the right knowledge. Like, now I have heard this, I should start changing my life. Then only I'll be the fourth kind of horse.
Yeah.
Yes, if required. If that is required, if the student is completely off track or not following, it is the teacher's duty to correct the student. Otherwise, if you are just going to let him do whatever, then he's not going to. Especially in the beginning, like a tree, you know, like a plant. When it first starts growing, you make a little fence around it and you put a little stick for the plant to grow around, because the plant is weak and needs support. And then you don't want other animals to come and eat it, so you put a fence. But once the plant becomes a bigger tree, then you can take off the fence, can grow on its own. So similarly, a student in the beginning, like a child even, you need to protect the child. You know, give it right knowledge so that the wrong influence, wrong kinds of friends, what kind of. So just as you need to rebuke the child and protect the child so that he may not get into wrong company. So a student also, yes, needs to be protected. His knowledge, especially in the beginning, could be easily, he could be confused or sidetracked. So yeah, I think it is required. Some amount of discipline is required. That's what they say. That's why they say it's a disciple. A student in spirituality is called a disciple, means one who subjects himself or herself to discipline. Because like any other science, spirituality also needs effort, needs discipline. It cannot just come of its own. Swami means master, the master or the Lord. Guru is the correct word for teacher. You know, just as you know, when you meet the Pope, you say, my Lord. You know, that means expressing your humility. So Swami means, also Swami means the one who is the Lord of his own body, of his own mind, one who has conquered his mind. You can call a Swami. Swami means one who is in control, who is the Lord. But Guru is the correct word for teacher. Gu means darkness. Ru means one who removes. So one who removes darkness is called Guru. They may or they may not be. Like some of them are Swamis, they wear orange. But if they are not Swamis, they could wear white or yellow. Yes. So depending. Yes. Yeah, they wear particular colors based on their status. Yes. But that does not mean that if they're wearing yellow or white, they may know less. You know, they may know as much. It's just how many years you have worked with the mission, and you know, there are different criteria. But they may be very advanced in their knowledge. Orange. Orange is the one that is the Swami. Orange. Highest, yes. Orange is the color of fire. It means this person has burnt all his ignorance. Vasanas have been burnt in the fire of knowledge. Orange also means sacrifice, you know, so that he has sacrificed all his ignorance in that. And then yellow and white. White is again, you know, person who is studying or learning. And then yellow is one who is on the path but has not yet reached.
That's all the white, yellow.
Yes, yes. No, all over the world there are a lot, but then a lot of them, in a lot of places, they just, people on their own put on orange clothes and start wandering. So they have made themselves into, a lot of people just do that, you know, just put on orange clothes and just go around and say, I've studied and start. But in our mission, they have to go through a proper training. They have to go for 2 years studying in Bombay, in India. Then they have to work, serve, and do all that and continue to teach. So it takes about 7 or 8, 9 years, about 2 years of study, and then about 7 years after that, about 9 years approximately, of studying, teaching, and serving, and doing all that. So we have very few in our mission. There may be about 100 maybe at the most, maybe less. Yeah. But in the world, there would be, you know, thousands, because there's so many. If you go to like India, if you go to Banaras, we went to Banaras, everybody is walking around with orange clothes. It doesn't mean they are all necessary, because you can, there's no like law that you can't wear orange. But the mission, in the mission, if you want to be called, you have to go through a certain... Actually, there's a difference between Brahma and Brahman. Brahma is the creator who creates this world. Because the God has three aspects. He is the creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer. So one aspect of God creates the world. Other aspect takes care of everything. And the third one is, when it's time for you to leave, takes you away. So Brahma is the creator of the universe. He does not take care of it. He does not destroy it. But Brahman, when you put an N at the end, it represents that total consciousness that is without name and form, which is the support of the whole universe. So the creator, sustainer, and destroyer are manifestations of that one Brahman. So Brahman is that total consciousness, which is formless, nameless, which cannot be described, which is in every one of us.
Which would be like Christians called Jehovah?
Or Father in Heaven, what Jesus called as Father in Heaven.
So Brahma is created, sustainer,
Vishnu. Vishnu, that is Krishna, is the one who is appeared as, Vishnu appeared on the earth as Krishna. And then Shiva is the one who destroys. Yes, Shiva. Shanti means peace. Shanti means peace.